It's time!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Pound for Pound. I'm your host, Andrew Canary, and I'm alongside my good friend, Chris Carino, this week. Guys, it's a good week to be an MMA fan. We got some good fights. We're finally back in action with them. I know we kind of had a bit of an off week with Thanksgiving and all that, but we are finally back in action. Before that, though, Chris, how are you doing?
I'm great. Always good to be here with you, Andrew, talking some cage. I was talking in the back just now about how I was really here for the conception of this podcast. Saw you kind of editing and working on the logo, and you really, I just see the enthusiasm you have for it, and it makes me so much more enthusiastic myself to be here with you and talk some cage, and it's a good time. I got a bit of the MMA bug right now. I feel like the last couple nights I've devolved myself into watching some UFC all-access content, which they do a fantastic job of. Really one of the reasons why they are where they are right now in the sports world. And yeah, I'm just excited to hear, just to talk some MMA.
Yeah, no, I mean, their production is off the charts. Love the products that they put out. And I mean, it's easy to become a fan, so I'm glad I'm able to kind of, you know, I guess start a new movement.
You're my mixed martial arts shaman, Anthony.
Yeah, I'll take the guru title, 100%. But we do have some exciting fights in store for us this weekend. It is UFC Fight Night, Dariush versus Saryukin. It should be a very, very fun fight. And the thing that surprised me was I was kind of expecting them to kind of have like a soft start back into, you know, their weekly fight cards building up to UFC 296, which we'll talk about in just a bit. I thought that they were probably going to, you know, kind of have like a middling type of fight, nothing too exciting. But looking throughout this entire main card,
yeah,
oh my God, there's so many good fights. I mean, people moving up weight classes, people moving down weight classes, huge names, last minute notice replacements coming in. And making fights even better. Overall, they've really put on an entire card here that's going to really deliver, at least in my eyes. I'm super excited for it.
Yeah, I mean, when you have Klaus and Solecki, they're playing the middle of the prelim, and they are a combined 13-4 in the UFC. That's when you know the card is absolutely stacked. And I feel like they haven't laid it on thick when it comes to these fight nights, just because of how much of a cultural explosion a lot of these numbered UFC pay-per-views have been. But this one's absolutely stacked. I think they're really trying to make this push now. As we, you know, 300 isn't super close, but it's within the year to say. So yeah, this year is a really big kind of swing for this UFC. And with, you know, the stars really emerging, people like Strickland, people like Sugar, you know, there's other people. I would like to say Leon, but I don't want to, you know, he's definitely not the draw of those guys. But I do think the UFC really is looking to launch off into the stratosphere right now, and they're trying to stack a lot of these events, such as fight nights.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I'm very, very glad that they're starting to do that, because, I mean, if you look a couple years ago, I mean, there would be some pretty big slumps in between UFC pay-per-views. But, I mean, with the 30th anniversary of the UFC finally here, I mean, I'm glad to really see some depth in these cards and as we kind of get to, you know, big blockbuster pay-per-views.
Right. And just one thing, I have a question for you, Andrew. When you kind of look at the UFC calendar, obviously you just talked about a time where there was definitely a gap in between action that people cared about. Do you think it's getting to be a little too much? Do you think that we're almost taking it for granted? Do you think there's a bit of MMA fatigue, UFC fatigue, or do you think it's almost better than more content?
I would say that there would be MMA fatigue if they didn't take a week off to like really kind of allow people to take a break. I was very glad that they kind of gave us a break during Thanksgiving. Yeah. You know, let all the journalists and fighters, you know, fans just chill out for
a little bit. Let football have the weekend.
Exactly. Yeah. Let football have the weekend, all that good stuff. But yeah, I mean, I can definitely see if this, you know, kind of continues, fatigue maybe setting in. Mm-hmm. But I will say, though, I mean, just with their ability to put fun fights on, which I feel like hasn't always been in the UFC's, like, I guess, like, tool set. Sometimes they've really kind of had a tough time putting entertaining fights on, not necessarily, like, technically good matchups, just, you know, fights that you can sit down with your friend and just be like, yo, look at this. This is amazing.
Yeah, just wars.
Now that they're able to put on just a couple good entertaining fights in pretty much every fight night, I think that fatigue is honestly just, it's a non-issue, at least to me.
Right.
But, I mean, just getting right into this UFC fight night, I mean, you kind of highlight it. Just the prelim card alone is crazy. I mean, we got Dracar Close versus Joe Selecki, two guys that are really, really skilled.
Is that Close or Close?
I'm not too sure. I think it's, at least from what I've heard.
There's a soccer player spelled the same from Germany, and it's Close.
I think it's Close, at least from what I've heard in UFC commentary. It could be wrong, though, because back when Francis Ngannou first joined the UFC, they called him Ngannou, which is, like, the goofiest thing of all
time.
That
was Rogan, I feel like. I feel like I heard Rogan saying that. I saw Mati Dembele yesterday, one of our regulars as well. He kind of has the haircut that Ngannou was going for at the time before he really dropped the top when he had the braids going. I see a resemblance. But anyway, they're not great with the abbreviation, but just, you know,
pronunciation sometimes.
Having everything ready.
Exactly. And I will say that's more so on, like, Joe Rogan, because he's, you know, somebody that doesn't, I would say, always put the most into his prep work. Somebody like a John Anik, though, he's always on top of it. He actually has some really cool videos out there on his, like, Instagram of him making, like, fight cards. Like, he'll have these index cards and fill out all the info for fighters before they actually fight. So, like, he can just look at them, reference them. Something that our WFUV reporters do as well. And people that call the game, such as yourself, now and calling women's basketball.
Which fighters have custody of their children, things like that.
Things like that.
You know? I saw that clip today. But Anik is, he's a consummate professional. As me and you are big fans of sports broadcasting, we can really appreciate how good Anik is, especially taking over for Greeny and, you know, that whole debacle. But Anik really has just cemented himself as the voice of MMA.
The voice of UFC and MMA overall. I mean, just, you know, I'm always
off
down
on
for
a tangent.
I'm always down for some John Anik love, though. I mean, of course. I love that guy. What a good commentator. But anyway, though, I do want to get into this UFC fight night without further ado. And the first one I want to talk about is the head of this preliminary card, Miesha Tate, the women's MMA bantamweight legend, coming back. I think this is her first fight in 2023. She had a bit of a layoff. She actually had a fight scheduled against, I believe, Mayra Bueno Silva, who's now out for, I believe it was some, like, substance. I think that she, like, she didn't have approval for ADHD medication, something like that. Either way.
Something semantical.
Exactly. That fight got canceled, so then she had to wait a little bit longer to fight in 2023. Now she actually has her fight scheduled this Saturday. It will be against Julia Avila, and Julia Avila has been in the UFC for a while. She's actually had a lot of fight cancellations. If you look at this, all the C's are cancellations, which is crazy. I'm showing Chris it right now. It is ridiculous. But most recently, I mean, she had a fight that was supposed to happen against Raquel Pennington. That got canceled. Raquel Pennington's actually now fighting for the belt. So just to think of her at that same level is pretty respectable. But her most recent fight was a win over Julija Storylenenko, and that was a rear naked choke in the third round. Pretty impressive win. But despite that, I think it's going to be the Miesha Tate show, honestly.
Right. Yeah, the thing that kind of stuck out to me the most when kind of devolving into this matchup and looking into it more closely, the Vegas betting odds, Miesha Tate, plus 130 on Saturday. She's the underdog in this fight. I really don't understand it whatsoever. Obviously, you know, Tate's lost her last two fights, so there is a bit of a hype train reprieval from kind of how she's been, and maybe the validity that she just carries in the UFC maybe has gone down a tad bit. But Avila, she's never fought anybody in the top 10. It's been 2 years. There's a lot going against her, and I just don't think she's ever. We always say there's levels to this. It's a common phrase that has, you know, that goes around. Miesha Tate has very much been around and seen. You know, she's fought some of the
levels.
And she's fought, I would say, at least two of the top five women's fighters maybe ever, like, just in her time, in her career. So for someone who hasn't even had a top 10 win and hasn't fought in 2 years, it just would be hard to get the win. I agree with you. I think it's the Miesha Tate show. I don't know if it's dominant. I think it probably will go to the judges' scorecards, but I can't see Tate not winning, even with those two prior losses. It seems like similarly to how we think about, you know, when a college team schedules a lesser team after getting paid to go two games and play at Illinois or Arkansas or whatever. You come back to get the win against lower level competition, and she's the underdog. So I'm maybe overstepping how dominant Tate might be here just in comparison, but I do think this is a get back match for Tate to kind of get herself back into that title scene, or at least get herself back into the marquee scene.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that the biggest question mark for me in this fight is that I think that Miesha Tate will win this fight if she is thinking that she can still be a legitimate contender in this bantamweight division. Because honestly, considering her recent kind of comeback out of retirement and her record since then, I believe she's 1-2 right now, or 1-3 in her kind of comeback era, I guess, coming out of retirement. I don't know if she, like, I remember her coming out of retirement and her saying, like, I am going to be at the top of this division. I'm really trying to get the belt. But I don't know, after losing to Ketlin Vieira in 2021 and then losing to Lauren Murphy in 2022, if that's still really, like, her mindset heading into this fight. I don't know if she's thinking that, like, maybe I'm just going to go in there, pick up a paycheck since I'm a big name. I'm going to get paid a lot of money, you know, have a couple entertaining fights. And I think off the back of that, if she's going in with that mindset, it kind of allows Avila to maybe upset a couple people.
But on the other side of that, for me, Tate's wrestling matched with that crazy style that she, that her opponent has, and kind of how she doesn't really have power to really knock out Tate or really do serious damage to Tate, but that reckless style, it leaves her so open to be vulnerable to strikes and, you know, real danger. And with Miesha Tate, it's kind of a common theme in the UFC, but with people that are so seasoned as she is, men or women, the margin for error is so small. And I really don't think that we've ever seen Julia fight with that small level of error, with that small margin of error before. And I think Miesha will take advantage of it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And I think that Miesha Tate does have the advantage in the grappling and clinch work as well. It's just, I mean, when you have one of the most famous trilogies, not even women's trilogies, but just MMA trilogies, period, with Ronda Rousey, who's one of the greatest grapplers in MMA ever, you're bound to pick one thing or two up. And then off the back of that, she went out and got her belt. Miesha Tate won the bantamweight championship by choking out Holly Holm, you know, just really showing how good her ground game is. And I don't think that's something that's really faded over time.
No.
I mean, you still keep that skill, you know, doesn't matter how many years you're removed from that. So I think that 100% she's got this in the bag.
And these are pioneers, you're saying. Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey, she is in that class that really brought the women's division to where it is today. Before those ladies and women, it really wasn't where it is now. And I genuinely think the amount of legitimacy that the divisions get, Miesha Tate is responsible for some of that, 100%.
Yeah, and I will say, I mean, if Julia Avila comes out or goes out there on Saturday night and really like kind of surprises both of us and gets a win, I mean, I don't think you could beat anybody in the women's divisions that has as big of a name value as Miesha Tate. I mean, that just skyrockets her up the bantamweight division in terms of name value.
Yeah.
And I imagine she would get a pretty massive fight, if not like a contender fight after. So, I mean, big stakes heading into this one. And for it to take place on a preliminary card of a UFC fight night, it's just crazy to realize.
It's pretty crazy, And it's just, I mean, I do think it maybe is undervalued here a little bit. I think it probably could have gotten a better spot. But yeah, it's just a super stacked card, especially if you want to fit it in this calendar. I almost noticed that from the UFC recently. They more care about where the fight is on the calendar than maybe where it is in the actual event. Like, they really just want to get things out, get things happening. And this is a fight that's really going to—it's two roads going either way. It's really going to paint two different pictures of what the division looks like afterwards. But I just, from Julia's perspective, I can't think of someone, a minus-money fighter on the betting line, that I'd be more surprised of getting a win than in this fight. Like, I really would be shocked. And she's the favorite, so definitely be an interesting fight, but I'm rolling with Miesha 100%.
Gotcha. It might be worthwhile throwing some money on it. Who knows? We'll see.
Hey.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to go that
some
far.
Some V-Bucks, maybe.
Yeah.
A V-Buck or two.
Maybe a V-Buck or two, we'll say. But moving on, though, to this main card. That was a good bit. I appreciate it. Moving on to the main card, though, I want to talk a bit about this co-main event. It should be a very, very fun fight. That is Jalen Turner coming in on short notice to take on everyone's favorite fighter at lightweight, which is Bobby Green, or I should say Bobby King Green. I don't want to omit the nickname, because
of course,
what a cool fighter.
It's tough,
I mean, he has some of the best boxing capabilities at lightweight, but this is an interesting fight because originally it was supposed to be Bobby Green versus Dan Hooker, and Dan Hooker's most recent win was actually over Jalen Turner, which was a very impressive win because Dan Hooker was kind of on a skid heading into that fight, kind of proved a lot of naysayers wrong, saying, hey, I'm still here in the lightweight division. and was scheduled to go up against Bobby Green, who has been doing wonders in the lightweight division in terms of just, you know, kind of beating a who's who and still being a real competitor despite having a record of 31-14-1. It's crazy how long he's been in lightweight division. But anyway, though, that was going to be a really exciting fight. Dan Hooker drops out due to injury, and now Jalen Turner has another chance to kind of, you know, I would say maybe not, I wouldn't say maybe kind of erase the Dan Hooker loss, but maybe just, you know, not really take a back step in his career, I would say. Because if he gets a win over Bobby Green on Saturday night, I think that it definitely kind of puts that Dan Hooker loss in the back seat, especially considering that Dan Hooker was supposed to be in this spot in the first place.
I think it's relatively simple, this fight, at least compared to the Tate fight we just talked about earlier. I feel like that was a little more intricate. But this fight, I feel, is almost metaphorically a shootout, and whoever's shooting first is going to be winning. And I feel like there's just no way Bobby can outshoot Turner. I just think he's so much faster, so much more innate, so much more ready. Also, Bobby's defense, his hands are low constantly. That leaves such a hot, such a large margin for error for Turner. You can really kind of get creative.
Considering the height difference. The height difference is insane. Jalen Turner is 6'2", which is crazy for lightweight division just in general.
Yeah.
But he's going up against Bobby Green, who's 5'8".
Yeah.
So just the height difference, and also if you want to bring that in terms of reach advantage, Jalen Turner has a 77-inch reach versus Bobby Green's 71-inch reach. I mean, for a guy that, you know, really kind of puts his hands down, like you say, in Bobby Green, that just leaves, you know, so many opportunities for Jalen Turner to capitalize
on. I mean, but like you say that height, 6'2", and then you think in the lightweight division of the legends and the people who really carry that lightweight division. I don't know how those guys would fight a 6'2 guy. I mean, I mean, Connor is the obvious answer here. That would be insane. Even Eddie Alvarez, like, that would be equally as insane. I just don't, he's such an oddity in that division. And just in general, I think this fight is a lot more simple than people are really kind of giving it credit for. I think even on short notice, Turner's just, I don't know if he's the better fighter, but he's more inclined matchup-wise to get the victory here. And I think he has a obvious advantage over Bobby here. Obviously, you talked about how much people like Bobby, but it's definitely going to be tough. Even with the losses, Turner still just, he's going to be quicker to the draw. And I think everything I've been reading, analysts, things of that, for this fight, it's whoever's going to be quicker to the draw. And I just don't see Turner getting outshot. And also, I don't see him getting gassed out by Bobby as well. I see him having the bigger gas tank. And I think those two attributes are going to be lethal for Turner.
I don't think that Jalen Turner is going to be slow in the draw in any regards.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, considering too, just in terms of pure age and kind of where they're at in their career, Bobby Green is 37. Jalen Turner's 28. So, I mean, he has pretty much his entire prime, if you want to really consider like a UFC MMA prime, is kind of like around the 30-year-old age where you kind of, it's the convergence of skill and physical ability. I think that, it's just everything's kind of adding together to where it doesn't look that great for Bobby Green. It could be a big night for Jalen Turner. But I will say, though, Bobby Green is kind of known for coming into, like, really dire fights and really dire situations and kind of, you know, pulling wins out of a fire, per se.
Well, that's his reputation he kind of has, and I think that is what, you know, Vegas or just, you know, people in general in the UFC community are kind of going to be looking at when judging this fight and making their selection on this fight. And I think that might catch some suckers, maybe, you know, either betting on Bobby or just putting their support behind Bobby. And I think that that is a genuine kind of thing. It seems like when his back is against the wall, that's when he fights his best. But I feel like that's not as sound logic when you're just going down and you're trending downwards. I think that reputation can go away and that reputation can lose some strength, and I think it definitely has.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I remember at one point in time, Bobby Green was not as respected as he is now in, you know, just the UFC overall or just lightweight division. I remember it took him a while to, like, really kind of find his, you know, kind of second wind in his career, and that's what we've been seeing right now. So, I mean, maybe we could be seeing the end of it. I don't know.
I think Turner, he could really use this, especially with the name that Bobby is and the notoriety he has and just the fight in general. A lot of eyes will be on this. Turner can really use this to just, you know, propel himself into the next stage of his career, which, you know, by all accounts, I think he's ready for.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the thing I wanted to kind of, like, I get, or the thing I was trying to talk about earlier is that arguably this is a bigger opportunity for Turner than the Hooker fight that he lost a while ago.
Yeah, so, it I is. Mean,
what a gift for him in his career. 100%. And I think that he really needs to make the most of it on Saturday night. And based on what I'm hearing from you, I think that we agree that he will.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so we'll see how that happens. But moving on to this main event, I know we only have a couple more minutes left in this episode. I want to talk about a guy who is coming back off of a loss and a guy who is really trying to break out in the lightweight division and make himself a contender. The first of those that I'm talking about is Beneil Dariush. He's coming off a loss to everyone's favorite fighter, because it kind of split in the lightweight division. Some guys are Makhachev fans and some guys are Oliveira fans. But Beneil Dariush most recently losing to Charles Oliveira. And on the other side of the octagon on Saturday night will be Armin Saryukin, who's really trying to make his, notice in the lightweight division. He's really trying to go up the rankings, make himself a legitimate contender. And so far, I mean, he's been building up a really, really good resume. Most recently getting a win over Joaquin Silva, also beating guys like Demir Ismagulov, Joel Alvarez, only really dropping a fight to Matheus Gamrot, who's a really respected guy, actually somebody that Beneil Dariush beat in his rise to kind of title contention himself. So there's a lot of interesting things going into this fight. I know Beneil Dariush is looking to come back after a pretty big loss, whereas Armin Saryukin is really trying to kind of, like I said before, just build up that record and become a real lightweight contender. But the biggest question I have for you is, how do you think Beneil Dariush is going to look coming back after getting kind of knocked out as badly as he did against Charles Oliveira?
Yeah, you know, Drew, it's interesting because I do think putting too much value on losses, past losses, can be a bit detrimental when looking at a fight objectively. But this fight, it seems like that Charles fight might have taken away something from Beneil that can't be given back. Just a piece of him that just will never be full or never be, you know, never be complete again.
I was scared you were going to say that because I kind of saw the same thing too. But Right. Continue, please.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I do think there's a level to that where you have that kind of traumatic experience and you can be prone to it again. That's kind of what I've seen a lot of people talking about when it comes to from Armand's side, is he needs to get out early and really just get after him, let him know this is a banging contest. Like, they're going to bang it out 100%. And this is going to be an absolute war. And I feel like under that perspective, you can get after him early, get him as uncomfortable as he can, especially with that, you know, coming off the Charles fight. Both of these fighters pretty balanced. I do think that Armand probably has more skill set when it comes to the balance of wrestling and striking, but when you really think about just overall how he's going to get it done, getting after it early and really putting the pressure on is going to be how he does it. And I think that's all, you could account that all to the Oliveira fight, and you could account that kind of strategy and maybe that effectiveness on Beneil to that Oliveira fight. And I think that might be strategy that you see opponents take for him the rest of his career, and really could be detrimental.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I do want to kind of highlight some things that Beneil Dariush has been really good at, and that is coming off of, you know, pretty terrible losses, mm-hmm. not taking him too much in stride and kind of, you know, starting a new chapter in his career, because that's kind of what his career's been defined by. I want to kind of bring your guys' attention to 2017, 2018, which are probably the two worst years of his career. Mm-hmm. In 2017, he fought against Edson Barboza, got flying kneed into, like, the shadow realm. It was so bad. And then in 2018, started to build a couple, you know, wins back. He was like, guys, that Edson Barboza's fight was way in the past. And then he loses to a guy that was a late-notice replacement, not even the UFC, and Alexander Hernandez, got knocked down in the first round. But since then,
it's even Ben Askren would be like, that's a bad year. You know
exactly,
what I mean? Like,
yeah.
even Tito Ortiz is like, he had a rough year.
Yeah, that's tough looks. That's a bit of a rough year there. But since then, I mean, up until 2022, from 2019 to 2022, he was perfect in the octagon. He really put those losses, took them kind of in tow and learned from them. So I don't want to kind of come out and say, like, Beneil Dariush is done. He's not ever going to win another fight after that Charles Oliveira loss, no matter how kind of embarrassing it was. I mean, it was a close fight, but also, like, a bad finish. Man, he got knocked out bad. But I don't know. I mean, I'm just personally a little worried for him heading into this fight, especially considering that Armin Saryukin is such a good grappler and such a dangerous fighter. And it's different than most MMA grapplers, I feel like, at this point, where they're you know, kind of take you down, Chael Sonnen, and kind of, you know, beat you up a little bit. You kind of walk away just more so feeling like you didn't do as much as the other guy. When Armin Saryukin takes you down, he cuts you up, he finishes you, he will put the pain on you and, like, make you feel like, wow, I just got mauled. Kind of like a Nurmagomedov style. So, I don't know. I mean, it's a real tough fight, but I will say Beneil Dariush, with his ground abilities, could fight him off pretty well. I don't know.
Yeah, and there's one element we haven't talked about yet. Dariush never fought five rounds before. That's a big component to this, that he has never had that five-round experience before, and this is going to be a real test for him. I do think he's a smart enough fighter, mature enough fighter to get it done, and I do think it won't be as much of an adjustment, but that is an element that can sometimes go by the wayside and we don't really pay attention to. But really, Armand's going to be he's going to be the comfortable one in here. The fourth round, he's been in a fourth round, you know what I mean? Dariush has never been in a fourth round, so it's going to definitely be an interesting ambiance that's created when it comes to just that dynamic and that aspect of the fight. But just moreover, I just think Armand, he's just too diverse with his striking. I do think if he gets out early and hits him fast and hits him quickly, he can diversify it as it goes, the more kind of leniency you give yourself and the more maybe you put Beneil on the back foot. But I really feel like this is the coming out party for Armand. Beneil is, he's big time. Like, that's a big time win that'll definitely add to his resume. And it's one of those main events you see at the beginning of a hype package when he's fighting for the title in 5 years or whatever. Yeah. You want to see the beginning of the hype train. You go to that fight night main event. And I think this is going to be that fight night main event for him.
Yeah. No, I mean, this definitely could be the kickoff party for him. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Beneil Dariush, not the biggest name in terms of, you know, just like a, like, I feel like kind of Conor McGregor-esque fans watching him. But like, people that know fighting,
The people that know Cage, they respect
Beneil Dariush. But with that note, I think that just about wraps up this episode of Pound for Pound. Make sure to watch the UFC Fight Night this weekend and our recap episode next week, breaking down all the results. Before I go, I want to give a huge thanks to my fantastic co-host, Chris Carino, as well as the producer for this week, Ralph Barbieri. I've been Andrew Canary, and Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports.